That's Monty Alexander on piano with Bob Marley's No More Trouble, featuring DeFeo Marsalis on trombone and Hassan Shakur on bass. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Thursday, January the 2nd, 2014, our first program of the new year. And I hope the new year greets you in good health and in good mind, a solid mind. Well, we'll be talking about two things today. They seem unrelated, but they are, in a way, quite linked because they have to do with the law. In California, the law and the courts say that a hospital is not obliged to take any extraordinary measures to help a patient deemed to be a corpse, even if the hospital's medical care might be the reason the patient is brain dead. And in the next half of the program, we'll be talking about a development in Colorado, where the law now says that people may light up and enjoy a blunt or several at their leisure, providing they buy their pot from a government-licensed store. It's a case of blunt hypocrisy. We'll get to that in the second half of the program. But first, let's review this case because it's very, very significant. 13-year-old Jahai McMath, who suffered with sleep apnea, went to the Children's Hospital in Oakland. Of course, her parents took her. Her family took her there for corrective surgery. She was to have her tonsils removed, but the hospital says that the surgery was more complex than that because it involved removing nasal and throat tissue. She comes out of surgery, and her grandmother, who is a nurse, said that she was holding her hand and comforting her grandchild when Jahai began bleeding profusely from her mouth. The grandmother, Sandra Chapman, said she told the nurse to get a doctor, but no one took her seriously. She's quoted in the London Mail as saying, only when she noticed that Jahai's vital signs were slipping away and she shouted across the intensive care unit for help, did Jahai get some degree of help? Did they actually start to respond at that time? But by then, it was too late for a crash team to resuscitate her in time to stop devastating brain damage. Jahai went into cardiac arrest, and she has been in a coma since then, since December the 9th, the day of her surgery. The damage is so severe, the hospital says there is no chance of her recovering and wants to turn off her life support machines that are keeping her heart and lungs going. The hospital says the child is legally brain dead. In fact, they don't even refer to her by name. They refer to her now as the body. Doctors at Children's Hospital and an independent pediatric neurologist from Stanford University concluded that Jahai is brain dead. The hospital even went to court seeking an order to pull the plug because once brain death has been declared, a hospital is under no obligation to keep a patient on a ventilator. A judge sided with the hospital on Christmas Eve and gave the family until 5 p.m. on December the 30th to file an appeal. Jahai's family did file an appeal, citing religious beliefs. They asked the court to permit them to move her to another facility and continue her care. The court gave the family until January the 7th to do so. But moving Jahai is now a whole bunch of other problems. In fact, one, other medical facilities are reluctant to accept Jahai in the condition she's in. The family had been looking and looking, but comes word today that, in fact, a facility in Medford, New York, has been located and they are willing to take the patient. Well, that might be one problem solved. But in order to get her from the Children's Hospital in Oakland, California, to Medford, New York, she will still have to have some way of breathing. And in order for that to happen, a surgical procedure will have to be performed to insert both a feeding tube and a breathing tube. The hospital absolutely won't do it. They say they're not. The child is a corpse, and they are by law forbidden to do any surgical, any procedure on a corpse. They're prohibited by law to do anything. They're not helping in any way to get any physician to do this particular surgery that is needed in order to insert the tubes for her feeding and for to keep her lungs and heart going. So what is going on now is the family's claiming that because the hospital would not insert a feeding tube, not even a feeding tube, the hospital is in fact starving the child, Jahai. She's not eating because the only way she can eat is by a feeding tube. Well, that's generally where things are with this case, but it is, of course, an extraordinarily painful thing to witness. And all the more so because we have this intervening authority called the law. The law, the courts, medical procedures, medical ethics. I'm interested in how you see this case. What from your point of view should happen here? Is the hospital correct? Even if the hospital is, of course, chiefly implicated, and reasonably so, that the child was taken to that hospital for that procedure, and the hospital, in that sense, had legal custody of her and was therefore bound by law to deliver the best medical care, which she apparently did not get. It's not a case that, well, the surgery was performed and she went home and then something happened in the intervening time and it caused her to be brain dead. She was brain dead right there in the hospital after receiving surgery from the hospital. And the hospital is now saying, well, it's a sad situation. These things happen. But we do not view this child as a living being anymore. She is, in fact, a corpse. That's exactly the hospital's point of view. She is a corpse. And why do they say she's in a corpse? She is a corpse because a corpse, you can push air into a corpse, but the corpse cannot voluntarily expel air. A corpse cannot breathe out. So even if you mechanically force air into a person who is brain dead and whose body functions have shut down, the hospital is saying technically because she cannot herself expel that air, she cannot breathe out, she's now a corpse. Now, this is a horrendous situation. But we have the hospital chiefly hiding under the color of law. And in fact, the court has sided with the hospital so far. In the appeals that the family has made to the court for some kind of intervention, because the family believes that their child is not entirely beyond hope. But is this a case of the family being emotional and not wanting to face the facts that maybe the child has died, maybe the child is brain dead? But even so, is the hospital compelled to go beyond what they consider to be a reasonable level of care to at least, because this isn't now months and months and months after this situation has occurred, even within a week or two of surgery, should the hospital, is it incumbent upon the hospital to demonstrate a very strong good faith effort here to attend to the family's requests that everything be done to resuscitate this child? What is your view? 888-874-4888. It is an extraordinary circumstance happening, of course, in the backdrop of Obamacare and all of that. What we see as what hospitals do, and it's very clear why they're doing it. They're doing it because money is involved and the fear of further litigation, that is to say, more money in a lawsuit. So now the child, Jahai McMath, is not being fed. So what is to become of her? They've located a hospital in New York, but she cannot be transported without these procedures being done to assist in her feeding and in her breathing. The hospital wouldn't do it, and no doctors have come forward so far to do it. They're terrified of the legal implications here. And could you blame them? How do you analyze this? How do you see this here? If justice were to be done here, what would you say it should look like? Who is supposed to do what? And on whom does the responsibility ultimately fall? Your thoughts at 888-874-4888. Hello, Sarah. You're on the air.
Greetings to you, Eutrice.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Greetings to the PRN audience, and Happy New Year.
Thank you.
You're welcome, ma'am. Eutrice, this thing hits very close to home for me personally, because I've been in a situation like this twice, Eutrice, and it's not a very pleasant situation. Both times it did not end very well. The first time, my first husband was on life support. He was also declared brain dead. And he was on the machine, and the first things, I didn't know that. He was in a motorcycle accident. I was not aware of it. I got to the hospital. The first thing the doctors told me was he was dead. What do you want to do with the organs? That's how they took. That's exactly the words that they used to me. I was already in shock because I just thought he had a simple motorcycle accident. They just told me blunt out like that. I said no. I'm not donating any of his organs, and I need to get in touch with his parents. I need to get them here because I did not want to be the one to pull the plug and for them to hold that over my head. So I got on the phone, called them. They all drove overnight, came straight on through. We were in South Carolina at that time, and they came in there, and we all made a decision as a family, his mother, father, brothers. We all made a decision, and they said, okay, yes, we'll do it as a family. Go ahead. After a few more days of testing to make sure, then we went ahead and we gave the okay for them to take him off the support. To this day, that's been over 20-some years ago. I still have that guilt on me for what happened to that, and it's never going to go away. My late mother, who passed 8 years ago, same thing the doctor told us. She had no, they said all of her veins collapsed. She was on renal failure. They said they couldn't feed her anymore. They couldn't put any more tubes in her because she had no more veins for them to put it into. So we had to make a decision as to take her off of life support or just let the woman starve to death. Thank God, the Creator came in, stepped in, and took her out, took that out of my hands so I wouldn't have to make that decision for the second time to say another human being should not live. This hospital with this child and what's going on with her, Eutrice, if that's all they have to do is to put a feeding tube, to do a surgery, to put a feeding tube in her because somewhere else would like to take her and do all they can to give her that chance to see if she will come back from this. They need to live up to their Hippocratic oath of first do no harm.
Well, the issue here, though, is that technically, by law, at least this is what the hospital is clinging to as its potential defense right now in the situation, is that because of the fact that there is no brain function, Jahi McMath is a corpse. This is the hospital's view, and apparently this is a law. They cannot do anything to a body that is deemed to be a corpse. In fact, they said that is the function of a coroner, not a medical doctor. And they will not permit any doctor to do that procedure or those procedures on the premises of the hospital. So it's a matter now, the fact that this child is dead, you know, is one thing. Now everybody's running for legal cover. How exactly are they going to deal with this? But it is a very complex situation.
The coroner also have to go through to medical school. He's also have to be medically trained. So why are you saying it's up to a coroner to make a decision when you, as a medical doctor, you see, they have all these different terminology for death you treat. They have medical death, they have clinical death, they have brain death, physical death, all these different deaths that they keep throwing in at you.
But they've already gotten independent verification, if you will, independent agreement from other doctors that say, the agreement is, this child is dead. This child is largely being kept alive by artificial means, but for all intents and purposes, this child is dead, there's no brain function, and a medical examiner will not be doing any procedures on a living body. A medical examiner is to do procedures on a corpse, a dead body. They're not doing the procedure at the hospital, and they're not going to allow anybody to do the procedures that would keep her alive at
but
the hospital.
You treat this as ridiculous, because I could see if you personally don't want to take the liability in your facility to do this surgery, fine. That's you covering yourself. But if there's other people medically trained who would like to do this procedure because they want to give this family a chance to see if some more testing could be done, and if this child, some or the other, some electronic brainwave activity would come into play and she would come out of this. That's the chance that they want to say. How long is too long? It's not even been a month yet since it just happened. I think it was December 3rd. They said is when she went into this coma.
December 9th.
How long?
Yes, December 9th. But
less than a month. But Terry Schiavo, that woman out there in Florida, she was on one for over for years.
The Schiavo Foundation is said to be playing a role in helping the family with its expenses and in finding another medical facility to transfer Jahi to. They're supposedly being very cooperative on that level. The problem here is how to get Jahi from Oakland Children's Hospital to Medford, New York. She has to breathe in between those two places, and she has not been fed for a while. So this is a question. What do we do? What is justice here? What is justice?
Justice here, Eutrice, I'm going to say this and get offline. Justice here, Eutrice, is that until such time as this child is completely flatlined, no artificial means on her, she is still a living human being. Even if a machine is doing the pumping for her, she is still living. And if there's a possibility, even if it's 1% possibility out there that she can recover from this, it is ethically upon any medical staff around this country who can go in there and do this job, go in there, put the tubes in the feeding tubes as the tracheectomy, whatever else need to do to this child in order to get her to go to some facility so that she can recover. Because we can't, usually this is a very heavy thing to be put on someone to take someone off of life support. This is something you don't ever recover from. This is something you carry with you because you are playing judge, jury, and the creator in deciding on a life. And I do not want, this is not up to no doctors. You are supposed to be preserving life. You're not at all cost. And that's not up to you to say no that she's a corpse and you're not going to do it. You're supposed to do your doggone job.
All right. Well, thank you. I'm telling you, this is a very interesting case.
Thank you, Utrecht.
Because thank you so much, Sarah, for your call. 888-874-4888. The question here is, the hospital, with what has happened so far, the hospital is clearly aware that it has heavy liability and heavy responsibility for the condition of Jahi McMath. A healthy, a reasonably healthy child comes into a hospital for surgery. It wasn't supposed to end up that she would be brain dead. And then we heard about the grandmother saying that she was there, the grandmother who is a nurse, who said that she was holding her granddaughter's hand and comforting her after the procedure because the child was still frightened, and Jahi kept saying it hurts so much. And she was comforting her when all this stuff started to happen, and she had to scream for help, and she felt that people dismissed her the first round, and only when it became, when it came to a point of beyond control, did they respond. So the hospital is very much aware that it has some major legal liability here with respect to that. Now the hospital is hoping to limit, it's hoping to limit its legal liability by saying, well, we are hiding behind what the law says. And the law says a hospital is not obliged to take extraordinary measures to keep a person alive if all clinical indications are that the patient is dead. And the hospital has used the word corpse. They believe that this child right now is a corpse. Rose Ellen from Queens, how are you?
Oh, hi, Utrecht. Well,
hello.
To me, I agree with the previous
Thank
caller.
You.
You know, this notion, oh, we don't do procedures on corpses. Well, they do when they want to harvest your organs. Then they take very good care of people. Then they actually kill you to harvest your organs. So this whole thing, it's disingenuous. The bottom line is, yeah, the law does state they can't do a procedure, but that is a corrupt law. It's an outrageous law. And this business, oh, it's the parents. They just don't, they love their daughter so much, they don't see what we see. They don't see the truth. They don't see, they can't face the fact that their daughter died. But the fact also is that plenty of times people recover. People are called flatline brain dead and they come through. And that's a fact too. And it's absolutely outrageous that they're slowly dehydrating a human being to death. It's absolutely outrageous. And, you know, the law has to change. The law is a corrupt law.
The law has to change. How would the law change if you had anything to do with it?
What would I do?
Yes, if you had something to do with the change of this law, what would the law say?
That it's not sufficient. You got to have flat lines for 6 months, something like that. This fall, it's been, what, 1 month or whatever? Flat line, first of all, it's not flat line 100% because she's breathing and all that. Flat line, look at that guy in Israel. I forget his name. He's been in a coma for 8 years and all that. Okay, now he's dying. Okay, fine. But, you know, may he rest in peace. But the bottom line is they have the sense to you. If you're in a vegetative state, it's still a way of being alive. Vegetables have rights, too. I know that sounds ludicrous, but that's how it should be. And they kept him alive for 8 years or whatever it is, and now he's dying. Okay. But the same thing should happen here in the United States. That's my take on it. It's a very corrupt law. They want to harvest people's organs. They'll kill you to harvest your organs. And that they push down our throats. They're pushing that on us. They're pushing dehydrating people to death, like that poor Terry Schiavo, whose eyes were bugging out. Not one drop of water was allowed to touch her parched lips for 3 weeks. But they gave her an enema because she had a fever. And then we said, look at the wonderful nurses, how they took good care of her with her eyes bugging out from lack of water. Hello?
Yes, I'm listening. I'm listening intently.
It's outrageous that people supposedly medical people who care about compassion, about people suffering. Their brain waves are so brainwashed that they can't see someone dehydrating to death and they want to put a cold washcloth on her parched lips. They wouldn't even allow that.
Well,
because
here's a question.
They had washcloths that they would put on a person's parched lips.
Here's a question from the hospital's perspective. Does it make sense to use all this money to keep someone alive who has no chance of living?
No human being can say that when we have documentation of that being said about other people and they lived. Anyway, what does it mean? These people, all they care about nowadays is quality of life. Quality of life is a Mack truck to go around killing people who they decide they shouldn't be alive anymore. It's outrageous. Some people, they're meant to live in a coma. So what? That's still a way of being. It's still a way of existing.
Very, very good point there. Thank you so much,
You're
Rosella.
You're welcome. Happy New Year, you three.
Thank you so much. You too. Michael from New Jersey. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year.
And what is your view?
It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you. What's your view here about the situation?
Well, I'm trepidatious about wandering into this topic, but I've also had some experience, but it is contrary to others. I had the other extreme happen, actually. But I find it interesting, and maybe the solution to this, before I go on to that, is that, they point out that the importance of these advanced directives or living wills, and this is an indication of why it is so important. And many of us now, by the time we're getting older, we're thinking about living wills and advanced directives. We come in contact with, we have an operation or something, and then we have to confront the idea that we better know what we want in advance just in case, right? And so this is the importance of that. And maybe when you're born, your parents have to, make an advance of directive right there so that there's a direction, so it takes it out of everybody's hands and there's a directive on paper. Because in the instance of my father, who lived up into his 80s, but he had several strokes and he became vegetative. And my father was a sportsman, a very active gentleman, and he lived vigorously. He had an advance directive that he didn't want any extraordinary, heroic kind of things that hospitals would do or doctors, procedures, that, he didn't want to be in a vegetative state, and it was written on paper.
That's an adult.
Yeah,
this is an
adult with an advance directive. But he happened to be in a hospital that had, his doctor was a Hasidim, a very religious, Jewish person, doctor. And he didn't believe that that anybody should be taken off life. So, he believed in keeping people in a vegetative state. And it was his religious belief, apparently. But I'm not so sure altogether that there wasn't a financial interest involved. But anyway, this gentleman called me up in the middle of the night. My father has an advanced directive. And the doctor calls me and says, I want to put a feeding tube. I said, what loony bin did they let you out of? The neurologist, declared my father was brain dead. His advanced directive said he didn't want any... be in a vegetative state, and here's this doctor's religious beliefs overriding that, overriding his own desires and written legal document.
Well, here
so
we
I
have a kind of an
ethics.
Opposite situation. We
I'm
have
sorry?
The here we have a somewhat opposite situation.
Yes.
We have a child who is incapable of an advance directive or a living will, does not have the power to have one. Her family had decided for her what they think is in her best interests, reflecting their culture, their religious beliefs, and everything else. The hospital says your child no longer has brain activity, Other doctors confirm that the child has no brain activity, and therefore the child no longer is alive.
Right.
What do you do? What is the right thing here?
In this instance, I agree with your former callers, because the child doesn't have an advanced directive and is a youth, the parents are then given over, you know, legally, I think, the opportunity to write an advanced directive for her, a living will of what they desire for her. And I think that should be the principle to follow. And everything should be done to honor that directive that the parents give. Now, I find it very interesting that the hospital has its own advanced directive now under the law.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Now they have an advanced directive. No matter what your advanced directive says.
Correct.
Our advanced directive says no way.
And it's sanctioned by the court and, quote, the law. The law says the hospital is perfectly correct.
So if the hospitals or the law or the government can write advanced directives for us, what good are advanced directives? Why do we have to write one?
Well,
if they're going to write one for us.
The hospital's so-called advanced directive has to do with its allocation of resources. And it goes back, I hope people are hearing the phrase zero sum here, where this is a resource that the hospital can give. The hospital could decide to keep Jahai on life support, or could decide to hide behind its legal protection. And it chooses the legal protection because life now is the resource, the ability to keep somebody alive. Who is entitled to that consideration and who is not? How did the hospital make that decision? And does the hospital make this decision in every single case where there is no brain activity?
Well, this is an important ethical issue that people have to address. I don't know what the answer would be. I think that it's interesting that they, you know, that we have an advanced directive. We're supposed to have an advanced directive, and now the hospital has an advanced directive that can override our advanced directive. Now, supposing that happened in my father's case, that they say, well, this guy, you know, he's an important doctor here, and his views override yours, and it overrides what your father had written down on paper. So we're going to put a feeding tube. This is the opposite, okay? So we're going to keep him alive as a vegetable against what his wishes was and the family's wishes and everything else. So,
interesting.
So it
interesting.
Becomes a problem.
Thank you so much, Michael, for your call.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Eric from Brooklyn, how do you regard the situation? What is your view?
Hey, Trees. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Same to you.
I feel like this is basic. I don't think this is an advanced directive on the hospital's part. I think this is a decision, an arbitrary decision based on finances. You know, this is a decision that they've come to because this law, this so-called law, is based on interpretation. So what you think, I mean, when they want to do it to the prisoners in whatever jail, you know, that are on hunger strike, it's not so arbitrary or it's not so, you know, it's not such an extraordinary procedure. They do it, you know? So this procedure, that it seems to be a trivial, the very least they can do for a big, you know, a life that they've screwed up. And this idea that they're hiding behind this law is a law based on somebody who made a decision. It's a decision that they made that this is an extraordinary procedure all of a sudden when, you know, it's going to be financially, it's going to give them, you know, be a blow to them financially. So this is how I interpret it. They're just hiding behind a law that allows them an out, based on whatever they choose to, excuse they choose to use. So this is all of a sudden an extraordinary procedure when this is routine in some cases. When they want to do certain operations, this is routine.
Yes, but all surgery, as they say, all surgery has some degree of risk. But I agree with you. The hospital is prepared already. I mean, for the big picture, they know they're in big trouble with respect to this child's descent into this state. Mm-hmm. But they are trying now just to limit as much as they possibly can to mm-hmm. limit any further legal action against them. Yeah. So now they're saying, well, look, and the court backs them up. The court, they were able to rely on the law. And the court says, you're right. According to the law, you're correct.
Yeah.
Well, but it is interesting.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is another, you know, the last, one of the last shows you had, the one of the callers says, stay out of the hospital or stay away from the doctors.
Yes.
This is another affirmation of that, you know. Do everything you can to stay away from the hospital.
This is a huge question. So in your mind,
yes,
what is the correct and just thing that should happen in this case?
The correct and just thing that should happen, you know, in this tragic situation, in my opinion, is that the hospital should do everything that the family wants regarding the care of their daughter. So they should be prepared to provide any, you know, financial solution for any opportunity the family has to get their daughter back or to get their daughter in some, you know, condition where they can take care of their daughter. They should be responsible. They should be held responsible. That's how I see it. So if there's a place that's willing, it would be a different thing if no one was willing to take her. But obviously, there's a facility that has some hope and that has a vision or an idea of their capability to help the situation. Why shouldn't they be held responsible for any, you know, compensation? They should be held responsible, and that's the right thing for this judge or, you know, or any court to do. And you know, like you said, this zero-sum mentality, this mentality that it doesn't matter what the cost is, you know, money must triumph over any kind of humanity, is the reason for this situation. Because I think most people can see that, you know, I mean, most people will agree that you shouldn't be, you know, you shouldn't take your child to the hospital. And then, you know, that same day, the hospital gets to declare them dead.
It's quite a daunting situation, but yeah, we'll follow it and see where it goes, because, again, the family has been given up until January the 7th to get this done. And, of course, the court backing the hospital, and so far in every application the court has the hospital has made, the courts have sided with the hospital. So we'll see how it goes. Thank you very much, Eric, for your contribution today.
Thank you.
Well, we'll just mosey in to our next segment, but you know, this is an illustration of what I'm talking about when I talk about strategic resources in a society. Remember, I said there are only six things you need to look at, and healthcare is one of them. Anything deemed to be good, beneficial, such as this situation, this is beyond the tragedy of this little girl falling into such a desperate situation, having come to a hospital actually to improve her health, finds herself in a vegetative state. Even in that state, this is what we're all talking about and which we all recognize, there is an option that the hospital could exercise, the option to acquiesce to the family's wishes, to be cooperative in extending itself and in extending a level of care. The major tragedy having already occurred. Now, that extended care would be construed to be what I've been talking about, a strategic resource. That is to say, it is a benefit that the hospital can opt to deliver. But in zero-sum thinking, the hospital has already made a decision that's not going to work in this situation. There's only so much of this that you can give out. Okay, there's only so much of this that a hospital is prepared to extend. And in this case, the hospital says, sorry, you're not one of those people who should have this resource available to you. And the court will back it up. The court says, you're right. This child is now a corpse. We agree. You have no further obligation to this child. Never mind what we're saying here today about what's right, what's just, what's the fair thing to do. The bottom line is this is a resource. And the reason it's a resource is that there's so much money attached to it. Just to get this child from Oakland, California to Medford, New York will cost almost $40,000. Okay, so all these expenses people associate, wait a minute, are we really spending this much money on somebody who comes from a class of people who shouldn't have this anyway? Are we really going to extend ourselves this far? Even in a scenario where the hospital could show some degree of humanity, and in fact, let's be clear about it, it would be to its advantage legally to show that it in fact, once a tragedy occurred, it in fact responded humanely to the situation by dealing with the concerns of the family. It opts not to do it. Zero-sum thinking. Well, I want to go to Colorado. Where, as of New Year's Day, Colorado was smoking. That is to say, a bunch of folks in Colorado were really happy. They could light up a blunt or two and smoke at their leisure, providing they get their pot from a government-licensed store. Now, this is what I'm talking about, a case of blunt hypocrisy. So let me see if I understand this right. Now, people who have been buying their pot on the street from whoever it is supplying, they get to be convicted and they go to jail. They go to prison for this kind of stuff. But in Colorado and in many other states soon to follow, this is not a medical marijuana issue. This is for recreational use, which is the way most people have been using pot, for recreational use. You see how the government talks out of both sides of its mouth. Providing that you buy your pot from a government licensed store, other than that, you could be busted and jailed. What was the government's initial problem then? Is it the problem that simply they wanted to just tax it and then it would be okay? That's basically what the government is saying. If we can get our share out of it, in other words, if we could be the drug overlord and regulate the sale of drugs the way any typical drug dealer does, the government is saying, if we do that, then it's okay. You can have your pot and smoke it too, as long as we get our share. So the government is in the drug business, and it ought to, you see, we ought to be confronting these hypocrisies and these signals that, by the way, this one little thing, this little technicality here, is the reason why hundreds of thousands of people are in prison. So the question ought to be, for on a national scale, is the government high? I mean, who makes up these laws that at one point this is wrong, and even now it's still wrong, they're holding it, it's still wrong, even though voters voted for it. In fact, they voted for it on May the 20th, I believe, May 20th, 2013, last year. They voted for this measure to decriminalize marijuana in Colorado. And so the people have spoken. The state now is a state that has decriminalized marijuana. But the government is saying, okay, we're for it, because ultimately the government, being the federal authority, has greater power than even the state. or local authority over this matter. The government is saying, okay, so people voted for it. Well, tell you what, you can do it, you can have your marijuana, but we're going to license the stores, and we're going to get a piece of the action. So now is a constitutional question, it seems to me. If people in Colorado can get their marijuana from the federally approved store, why are people in jail because this is illegal? It can't be legal and illegal at the same time. It either is legal or it's not. So the government needs to make up its mind. And in any event, we need to revisit this question about if the government is inclined, as it is, to approve, it has approved 20 states, including the, I shouldn't say a state, but 19 states in the District of Columbia, which ought to be a state, but it has approved medical marijuana use in these areas, which means the government has to make some kind of decision pretty soon, and people should be challenging this on a constitutional basis. You can't be right and wrong at the same time. But it is a curious thing where the government tells you all the evils of marijuana, the things that you shouldn't do, how illegal it is, how it's a gateway drug, how it is a cause of addictions way down the road, how it is leading people astray and corrupting our society and doing all of these nasty, awful things. And it puts to mind the hypocrisy. When people were running numbers, okay, they're running numbers. They said numbers, the numbers business is illegal. That's illegal. It's illegal gambling. People went to jail for that. Adam Clayton Powell, in fact, lost his seat because they got a numbers woman to lie on him and set him up to say that he demanded some kind of extortion money from her, and she gave him money to protect her numbers racket. So the numbers racket is illegal. Great. So what do we call the lottery? Oh, the government gets a piece of the action. So therefore, the numbers racket is okay when the government gets its piece of it. Liquor is bad. All right. Liquor is really, really bad. Okay. But liquor is okay if the government gets its piece of the action. This is the stupid hypocritical signals the government continues to send. So people are perplexed. I mean, what? Maybe the government, is it possible that the government is high? I don't know. We'll see. We'll meet each other again tomorrow and round out the week, the first two programs of the year. I hope again that the year met you in good shape health-wise and mentally, and that you're ready to go for yet another year. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Sarah, Rose, Michael, and Derek, for your very deep thoughts, sharing your thoughts today. This is a case we'll be following, of course. Thank you so much for listening. Pass the word along that this is your favorite station, and of course, a little bit of self-interest here. This is your favorite program on your favorite station. See you tomorrow. Take care.